Welcome to session two of the Update on HIV and SARS-CoV-2 Online Symposium, held with safety precautions in the studios of Roularta Healthcare and focusing on therapeutic approaches and societal impact of SARS-CoV-2. We thank ViiV for their support of these programs. One novel therapeutic approach is the use of nanobodies, single-domain, single-heavy-chain antibodies from camelid animals, such as camels, llamas, and alpacas. Professor Xavier Salens from VIB, the Flanders Institute for Biotechnology, and Ghent University in Ghent, Belgium, has been studying these antibodies, also known as VHHs, since 2016, focusing on the receptor binding domains of SARS-CoV-1, MERS, and now SARS-CoV-2. He explained how a VHH differs from typical antibodies, which consist of four protein chains, two heavy chains and two light chains in each antibody molecule.
In essence, you need the two chains, the heavy chain and the light chain of those antibodies to do the job, to specifically bind, for example, to a viral pathogen. So the VHH there, or nanobody, or single domain antibody, this is derived from a so-called heavy chain only antibody, which, as the name says, doesn't utilize the light chain, and so it's more simple in makeup. And the domain that really targets the infectious virus, for example, is also smaller. It has advantages for a number of reasons, being small, being stable, and so on and so forth. These were discovered at the VUB in Brussels more than 20 years ago now. So we and others have shown that these nanobodies can be useful to control viral infections.
As Professor Salens said, these single-domain, heavy-chain-only antibodies lack a light chain, unlike conventional antibodies. Thus, they can be more easily produced and are typically very stable. For SARS-CoV-1 and MERS, a llama was immunized with recombinant spike, or S, proteins. The resulting clone 72 antibodies, called VHH72, bound to a site on the receptor binding domain, the RBD, that was not directly involved in the interface that binds to cellular ACE2, but did prevent binding of ACE2 to the RBD. And fortunately, the epitope where it did bind is very well conserved across different SARS-CoV-1 isolates, and especially important now, between other SARS coronaviruses, including SARS-CoV-2. The VHH was then engineered into a bivalent Fc fusion protein, which has improved virus neutralization properties, including against SARS-CoV-2. The VHH Fc fusion antibody can be produced with high yield in an industrial standard Chinese hamster ovary cell system, making it an attractive candidate as a potential therapeutic against COVID-19. It has already been shown to protect hamsters against infection with SARS-CoV-2. Professor Salens summarized the results.
When we move to a nanobody, which is now a hybrid molecule, a nanobody from the llama fused to a human IgG1 domain, we can see that we increase potency both for SARS-CoV-1 and SARS-CoV-2 with such a molecule. Now, such a molecule is interesting because it's also amenable for clinical use potentially, because it resembles a human antibody in that respect, because of making this chimeric fusion. So we could show that the antibody fusion, nanobody fusion as an antibody fragment has improved affinity for the SARS-CoV-2 receptor binding domain. We can produce it in ex vitro cells, so in a production facility that is known in the industry, we easily reach 1 gram per liter levels of that product, which is important if you want to deploy it clinically. And we also show that the project from ex vitro can neutralize the virus. What we've done, so we have isolated SARS-CoV-1, SARS-CoV-2, and of course also MERS nanobodies that are able to bind to these proteins and the viruses and neutralize those viruses. We have a high resolution insight in how they interact with those proteins, with those RBDs. And we believe that SARS-VHH72 as an Fc fusion with the human IgG1 Fc part is a promising candidate for further clinical development, for example, for prophylactic or therapeutic use against COVID-19.
Moving from the biologic to the economic, the next presenter was Levin Annemans, professor of health economics in the medical faculty at Ghent University and the Free University of Brussels, speaking on the balance between COVID-19 and its societal impact. He described the need for a comprehensive response that balances multiple perspectives, one concerning the pandemic of the virus and another the pandemic of public health. A major concern was to keep COVID-19 sufficiently in check through lockdowns to flatten the curve of disease incidence so as not to exceed the hospital and intensive care capacity in Belgium.
So we made it there. Now, one of the questions that we have to ask is, what would have been the excess mortality without a lockdown? Many people say yes, but so many people died. The key question is, when we talk about the lockdown, how many deaths did we avoid? There are many models there, because here you need epidemiological models. Also in health economics, we need all the time epidemiological models in order to predict what's going to happen with a given treatment versus another treatment. Here it's the same. These are dynamic models because people can infect, of course, each other. And what Cochrane did already quite early in the pandemic is look at the different models that were published then. And many models bring other results. Even in Belgium, there are different modelers working on COVID-19. They all come with different results. But it's a little bit like predicting the weather. When all the models go in a given direction, then you know that probably there is some truth, not really truth, but at least something coming close to the truth in those models. That's what the colleagues from Cochrane did. And they came to the conclusion, with still some quite ranges, that the lockdown has averted 44 to 81% of incident cases. And maybe more important, 30 to 60% of deaths having been avoided by the lockdown measures. Now, that's good news, but there is also bad news.
On the other side of the equation, the lockdown has cost the Belgian economy 60 billion euros, which in itself has health consequences. Those health effects are quantified in terms of quality adjusted life years, or QALYs for short. So using this measure, health economists can ask the question of whether the lockdown was worth it in terms of QALYs.
It's not here a question of health or economy. When the economy is suffering, this will also have a huge impact on the future health of our population, of course. There will be more poverty, there will be more inequalities, and that leads also to loss of health. Having said this here, we could then ask the question, and I'm a health economist, so we have to ask that question. We could not ask that question in the beginning of the crisis. There were no sufficient data, but now we can ask ourselves, was this cost effective to do this lockdown? It was clearly effective. The next question is, was it cost effective? In order to explain what I mean, I have to show you a graph that we use frequently as health economists. When we assess a new treatment, we look at two dimensions, the costs on the vertical axis and the health effects. We express them in QALYs. You could translate it as healthy life years. A QALY is a quality adjusted life years. It's a healthy life year. And we compare a new treatment or a new program with the current standard of care. And when you see that the new treatment is leading to savings to the healthcare system or to society and more health, then we call it a dominant treatment. Typically, a new treatment that can avoid a lot of hospitalizations will then end up being even net saving to the society because we avoid a lot of hospitalization costs and moreover increasing the number of QALYs. That's a fantastic result. What we see more and more in our country is new treatments that cost a lot of money compared to current care, and proportionally, a little bit of health gain. Here we have to admit this is not a cost-effective investment in healthcare. We don't have all the money of the world to spend on health and on healthcare, so this is an example of not wisely spent money. So we need to invest in health, but we have to do that wisely. Now, in Belgium, we often use a threshold. The typical threshold is 40,000 euros per QALY. What does it mean? It means that if we can stay below that threshold, a lower cost per QALY, then we talk about a cost-effective intervention. And when we go over the threshold, unfortunately, we have to say, sorry, this is not worth its money. It's not cost-effective. Exceptionally, we go up to 100,000 euros per QALY. That's the current situation, how we interpret cost-effectiveness results. Now, I did a quick back-of-the-envelope calculation. It's still much to improve, but it's a first attempt, just to see which order of magnitude are we. Currently, let's say we have 10,000 deaths. We can debate about that, how many of them were really due to COVID-19, how many were with COVID-19. I'm not going into that debate now. We assume that we have, with the lockdown, avoided 60% of deaths. That means that the true number of deaths would have been 25,000, of which 60% have been avoided, leading to the 10,000. That means that 15,000 lives have been saved thanks to the lockdown. McAllister and colleagues have calculated that each life that you can save from, so each person that you can save from dying from COVID-19 has saved 10 qualis. That's more than what many people think. Some people think, yeah, it's only elderly who die. They would have died anyway a couple of months later. That's not true. So in general, you can really save on average 10 qualis per avoided death. That means that the lockdown has gained 150,000 qualis. It avoided the loss of 150,000 qualis, 15,000 deaths each 10 qualis. But it costed 60 billion. And that means that the cost per quali is 400,000 euros per quali. So the lockdown was, let's say, not cost effective. Now, if you would ask me, what would you have done in March? I would have done exactly the same. There was no way out than doing the lockdown. But we can learn from this calculation that it's clear that a new lockdown would be rather dramatic for our society. That's basically what we learn from this.
But besides this calculation of personal quality adjusted life years saved and their costs, there are also other parameters of costs or savings to society that should be considered.
We also avoided hospitalization costs thanks to the lockdown. We also avoided quality losses thanks to the lockdown. We avoided productivity losses, people that cannot work because of their disease. We avoided so many diseases, that's also an economic benefit. But on the other side of the balance, you also need to take into account the additional damage that has been caused by the lockdown. It's not only that cost of 60 billion, it's also the additional damage to our public health. And there are four categories of damage. I already mentioned the final losses, but that leads in some cases to really poverty and what we call material deprivation, that people do not have enough money to have a decent life. There's an increase of aggression and violence. There's an increase in mental health problems like anxiety, depression. And there is also an increase in non-COVID-related health problems leading to morbidity and mortality. I will just tackle some of these. Le Bureau de Plan, they have already quite early calculated that these measures will lead to an increased number of people who live in what we call severe material deprivation. They don't have enough money to even have a decent living, to have food, decent food every day, clothes, etc. It will increase from 4.6% of Belgians to 6.6%. Yeah, now you could say that's only a 2% increase. But since we are more than 11 million, it comes down to about 230,000 people extra on top of the 500,000 that we have already in our country who live in material deprivation. There will be 230,000 extra people living in material deprivation. Also, absence of social network will significantly increase. I did the second back of the envelope. If indeed 230,000 people will end up the extra in material deprivation, people who live in severe material deprivation, they have on average four less healthy life years. People who are poor have also a more poor health and also less healthy life expectancy. The difference with those who live in normal conditions is 4 years. And that's even versus the second most deprived. That's not versus the average or versus the highest most deprived. That's versus the second most deprived. We assume, of course, that people do not get deprived as from their birth in this situation. It's somewhere in the middle of their life. So I assumed two healthy life years lost. But it comes down to 460,000 qualis lost. The lockdown has gained 150,000 qualis, but we have lost or we lose 460,000 qualis because of these measures. On top of that, we see an increase in anxiety and depression. That is from Cienzano. Cienzano does not only publish data on the virus. We see here a doubling of anxiety compared to 2019 and depression from 10% to 16% 19 versus 20. And in the meantime, Cianzano has issued additional reports on the condition of the mental state of the Belgians, and that increased anxiety and depression is currently still maintained. So it's not only during the lockdown and then it goes by. No, it's still there, this increased anxiety and depression. And there I do a third calculation. This means that about 800,000 Belgians extra live in a situation of anxiety. I don't make the calculation here for depression, but only anxiety. We know from our own research that on a scale between 0 and 1, we call that utility, 1 is perfect health and 0 is death, that people with anxiety lose on average 0.1 points on that scale. That comes down to a loss of quality adjusted life years of again another 87,000 qualies lost because of the measures.
Professor Anna Mons noted another effect of the lockdown, the toll it took on the mental health and the functioning of medical staffs. In addition, the lockdown prevented about 75% of diagnostic tests, almost 80% of specialist consultations, and almost 90% of rehabilitation programs. So going forward, the ultimate question is how to avoid another lockdown while still achieving the most benefit against the virus.
We should look at the following things. First of all, that we need correct numbers to talk about this pandemic. It's still strange that even today, after so many months, we don't have the correct numbers. That we have to replace panic messages by messages of alertness. This is a dangerous virus, of course, so we have to be very alert. But we also have to provide a perspective to the population. Where, like in Ireland, we are now in a given color. What if we follow the rules correctly, then we have a perspective to go to a better situation where we can do more again. That is what we call by perspective. We have to keep focusing on the key measure, which is physical distance. That's the biggest enemy to the virus, that is physical distance, and especially to those most vulnerable to the virus. We need proportionate measures, like larger places can hold more people, for instance. That is currently not applied. And then we have to reinforce the efforts to identify the origin of the contaminations. We are not performing them quite well. And we need those target groups where we know that there is a lot of contamination. We all know where they are, who they are. We need to communicate much better with them via trusted organizations, via trusted people, via influencers, etc. We are underusing this measure currently. And in the healthcare sector, we have to turn it around. In the first stage, only the absolute necessary care was maintained. What we could do here is that the care that is absolutely not necessary to postpone that. That's maybe 10-15%, but that can give some breathing room. I think there is also work to do about optimizing the protocols in different hospitals. I still see quite some differences in approach, and there is also room for improvement. Maybe there is room for telecare, and also we have to start tomorrow with a program of job satisfaction in the healthcare sector. We really need to improve satisfaction at work in the healthcare sector that can protect us against next waves of the possible next waves of the pandemic. And then finally, include the wisdom of the crowd. There is so many good ideas in our country, but nobody listens to them. And finally, we have to, and maybe that's, I know this is not something like we are going to save the world with this as from tomorrow, but if we don't start, if investing more in healthy lifestyle, we will face additional problems like we are facing now. And that's why it is also a priority, in my view.
We thank our speakers, Professor Xavier Sahlens, for his very informative presentation about a potential therapeutic approach to treating SARS-CoV-2, and Professor Lieven Annemans on the economic and societal impact of the lockdown for COVID-19. We thank you for listening, and please join us again for future episodes from this online symposium update on HIV and SARS-CoV-2. And again, we thank ViiV for their support.